We have an interview for you at this point in time. We're going to be discussing some of the things related to our children. And there's a project called Break the Silence, End Child Abuse. And that's the focus of this project. Let's welcome to our program someone who's going to give us some more insight, some explanation as to what's going on. Let's welcome Project Coordinator, Institute for Gender and Development Studies at UWE. That's Khadija Pierre. Good morning to you. Welcome to our show.
Good morning to you, Mr. Mahabir. Thank you so much for inviting us to be on this platform. We really do appreciate it. Just as you said, I am Khadija Pierre, the Project Coordinator for the Bankers Association of Trinidad and Tobago and the Institute for Gender and Development Studies, Break the Silence and the Child Sexual Abuse Project.
Okay.
This particular project began in 2008, and the main aim of the project was to engage communities and professionals alike within Trinidad and Tobago to understand the manifestations of child sexual abuse, as well as what are the underlying factors that contribute to its prevalence.
Mm. How does it work? What takes place? So you have this project that has been going since 2008, you said?
Yes, correct.
What happens? How is the project being implemented and all those things?
Okay, so the Break the Silence project takes on what we call an action research model, which means that its interventions for child sexual abuse is rooted in evidence-based information. In layman terms, it's nothing for the community without talking and engaging and understanding what the community needs before we go in. Some of the interventions would have been workshops, it would have been parent halls, it would have been programs on radio stations and initial receptions. It also related to building a toolkit, which the Break the Silence project has created to help teachers understand and manage in case there are students within their classroom that are victims of child sexual abuse.
Since 2008 to present, what have you all found? What is the data telling us?
Well, the data is telling us, first and foremost, that child sexual abuse is the second most common form of abuse, child abuse in Trinidad and Tobago. And since around 2015 to 2016, we have seen cases from 915 to 1,800. So with each decade, we have seen increases of child sexual abuse. And even as far back as 2007, there was a survey done showing that 87% of the population highlighted child sexual abuse as a nationwide issue. So even before the inception of this project, we as a nation understood the prevalence of this problem and understood its presence and how it has become a real huge issue in terms of our children and being able to protect them.
Let's specify some things for people. Let's talk about age, the age demographic. We're talking about child sexual abuse. What age group are we talking about?
So we're talking about anyone below the age of 18.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
It's an alignment of the legislation in terms of the age of consent, of course, mm-hmm. which was changed some years ago, but is anyone below the age of 18.
What constitute, well, this may sound like an obvious question, but still, maybe there are some explanations that people might not have considered. What constitutes child sexual abuse?
Well, I'll try to simplify it as much as I can, but child sexual abuse consists of engaging a child, someone who's 18 years younger, in sexual acts or for sexual pleasure. And that does not only reside within sexual intercourse as we know it, but in the use of any object, pornographic content, any sort of illicit or inappropriate sexual action for pleasure upon the child. I would also like to say that within child sexual abuse, it can occur between two children as well. So it's not just the case of an adult preying on a child, but it can also occur between an older child and a younger child.
Hmm. What has been the response from the authorities, police and others? I know we have child protection and this one and that one and the next and other groupings and the children's authority and so on. So have we made strides in treating with these things? Or is it still taboo in some instances? What's going on?
I would say on the state's end that the state has made significant strides, especially with the Children's Act. We've seen significant changes and some sort of shift in understanding what child sexual abuse and an expansion. I must give credit where credit is due. They are trying in terms of creating more programs or shifting the way in which they deal with child sexual abuse, but I would say it's still sort of taboo in terms of, you know, society and being able to openly talk about it, because within child sexual abuse the word sex is there, and sex is very taboo in Trinidad and Tobago, and especially when it comes to children, we tend to shy away from conversations around that. So meanwhile the state is trying, and there are gaps admittedly because of, you know, overwhelming numbers of cases, so probably underwhelming numbers of persons attached to be able to address those cases. But there are a significant amount of efforts and motions being put forward to address child sexual abuse.
I'm certain there'd be varying circumstances under which this takes place. And I'd probably give you the opportunity to explain some of them, because I assume you'd have forced, in some instances, which could constitute, I'm assuming, rape. And then you'll have grooming. You have instances where persons might be aware, but they don't want to say something because there's something to be lost. Then you have very public instances. Recently, there was a case where 6 people were shot and killed in Kuva. And there was an underage girl there with them, one of the victims. She died as well, and the reports are that she was involved with one of the men who was also shot and killed, and she was 15 or 16 or something like that. Tell us about the various circumstances. This project has been going on since 2008. What are these circumstances, if you can, some of them, that sexual abuse takes place under?
Sexual abuse can take place in terms of a stranger. That could be in terms of any stranger unknown to the child that may be predatory in a space they may be in. It could also take place within maybe a school setting where there may be an adult. I'm not saying particularly a teacher, but an adult that is, you know, familiar to this child, and this child has for some reason been in a compromising situation or preyed on this child, and as you recently said, grooming. There's also the case of incest, where within the home of the child, there may be a relative or a parent, particularly, who is sexually abusing the child. In the case of young ladies who are engaging in sexual activity with men who are over the age of 18, we understand that that is considered statutory rape in terms of the law. But we tend to be very careful and mindful of that, but we must protect the minor in the situation, which is the 15-year-old.
I know that we have numerous issues when it comes to underage girls who end up pregnant, and that comes from all kinds of circumstances, some forced situations. I know that even though you cannot consent, I don't know how else to describe a consenting relationship where you have young girls who intentionally or should I say willingly engage in this kind of behavior, even though it constitutes statutory rape and the age of consent is 18 and all these kinds of things, you have a real problem with it. But if you speak to anyone from Family Planning Association, they will highlight to you how bad the situation is with teenaged girls who end up pregnant, and some of them have more than one child by the time they're 18. What kind of information does or has the project found in situations like these?
In terms of teenage pregnancies, we found that most of the cases are due to socioeconomic circumstances as well as the social setting within the home. We have realized as well that most of teenage young ladies who are in lower economic homes find themselves in early unions.
Mm-hmm.
That is, they would have relationships with older men to help feed their families, to survive, and so forth. So in the cases of teenage pregnancy and young girls engaging in relations with older men, I really ask the nation to take into consideration how we speak about these young ladies and how we go about addressing this issue. Sometimes we hear things like, she fast, you know, she's a hot girl, she looked for what she was looking for, that type of language, rather than understanding what are the circumstances that would have led to this young lady, you know, becoming vulnerable, because that's what it is. She's becoming vulnerable to the pursuit of this older man.
Mm-hmm. I understand what you're saying. Because I've, in this job, there are all kinds of things that you see and you hear, and people come to you with all kinds of issues, and that's a real big one. Because you have, in some instances, where I know of a case in particular where she was 13 and got involved with someone who was much, much, much older than her. And now, I don't think she's 18 yet, and she has 3 children for 2 different people. And it's about circumstance, as you rightly did say. It's sad, but it's a reality. What has the project, if I can ask for examples of success for 2008 and now, what would you highlight as some of the successes of the project?
Oh, let me see if I could have not have you here holding. So to begin with, the project has been able to produce some credible research, which you can find on the Break the Silence page, which is on the Institute for Gender and Development Studies. Since its inception, it started on research in terms of engaging communities. Since then, it has been able to develop what we know as the Blue Teddy. The Blue Teddy is not gendered. It speaks to children. Every child likes a Blue Teddy, and it has a plaster on the heart, a meaning of healing from trauma. From the Blue Teddy, we've seen the branding of this project explode and become regional and significant to the movement of child sexual abuse, against child sexual abuse, as well as we see the development of our toolkit. This specific toolkit began with addressing teachers within the classroom, and it actually has developed over the years with additional funding we would have gotten. Specifically, we would have gotten funding from the Pan-American Development Fund, who would have provided funding for us to do a bilingual toolkit to address child sexual abuse within the migrant community, which we are seeing growing in Trinidad and Tobago recently. And we are also in line of today trying to develop a somewhat module for building safe spaces. As I mentioned, the project is rooted in evidence-based. So for every intervention that we have created along the years, it is based on the needs of persons. And the idea of safe space is rooted in the evidence we found in a panel discussion we had last year in April, which is the commemorative month of sexual abuse and assault. And we found that for a lot of teachers, social workers, guidance counselors, persons who really work with children, that the idea and the framework of safe spaces is important, and they need to build capacity in that.
Mm-hmm.
So from there, we have been able to also develop a short course, which we are hoping, fingers crossed, become a mandatory module, not only that we, the IGDS, carry out, but is also implemented throughout the university in terms of School of Education, as well as the social work program.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what are the options available. That there are instances we know where we've highlighted persons engage intentionally or willfully in this kind of behavior for whatever reason. And there are victims, persons who find themselves in situations that they do not want to be in. Two totally different things, even though we're talking about the same topic. The persons, children, persons who may know of children who are in situations like these, what are the options available to them?
Well, of course, you know, the first step of any finding out any case of child sexual abuse is your reporting.
Mm-hmm.
And I would advise anyone to contact the Children's Authority, which has various modes of contact, from their 24/7 hotline to their online reporting platform, as well as their email. They can also reach out to Childline as well, who is available in reporting cases such as this, as well as the Trinidad and Tobago Police Service.
Mm-hmm.
As we know currently, and we've seen in the news, we've seen a lot of the transition homes that these children are supposed to be placed in are facing problems themselves. And we have to admit that there are some gaps in capacity. However, I would say that the IGDS as a partner is committed to connecting with all stakeholders involved in the process of dealing with children with child sexual abuse and helping to build capacity and to somewhat improve the way in things that are being run as we speak.
Mm.
So in terms of availability, there is a due process that has to go on through the Children's Authority and the Trinidad and Tobago Police Service, as well as figuring out the placement of the child. If the child has a trusted an adult outside of the home, say that the assault is happening within their home and there's another trusted adult, that is up to the duty of those in charge, like the Children's Authority and the police, to see that appointment of that child
mm-hmm.
into another safe space.
The project has been around for a while, and from what you're saying to me, I can glean that you've collated a lot of data, and there are a lot of experiences that you've been able to witness and deal with, and circumstances and all these kinds of things. Do you think as a nation that we understand enough or fully or whatever what constitutes child sexual abuse?
I think that as a nation, we still have a little way to go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that we're far behind. Of course, with you know, social media and advocacy that has happened over the years with Break the Silence, a lot of people are aware of the issue. I believe that the problem is the taboo and our inability to talk about anything related to sex. And until we take off, you know, the blinders and we start to be more brave and more forward about talking about issues such as this, I think it leaves our children in a space of vulnerability, because then there's no space for them to have conversations, right? If I come home and something happens, can I talk to mommy or daddy or auntie about it? Or are they going to, don't worry about it, that's big people thing. So we really need to look into how we shy away from conversations like this. I don't think that the nation is unaware or doesn't understand what child sexual abuse is. I think that there's not enough discussion, an open discussion about it, that allows for us to pull apart what is really happening.
Yeah. What are some... I go back to the amount of years that the project has been around. I'm sure that you all would have formulated, as a result of what you've seen and the information you've gathered, some suggestions as to how we deal with this thing. What are some of those?
One of the suggestions we believe is, in terms of those state agencies that particularly deal with the protection of children, that they find a way to build a framework of safe spaces. For example, with Trinidad and Tobago Police Services, there must be a way in which when a child who is sexually abused comes into a station or any part, that they are met with empathy and they are treated with some sort of softness and diligence.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be that they're coming and they are re-traumatized, because coming forward in itself is a very huge deal for a victim of sexual abuse. Another tip that we must have is that persons must be trained in understanding how reporting works. For instance, it cannot be that where a child is situated in a specific home, in terms of children's homes, and some staff are aware of reporting and others are not too clear or in terms of the classroom, teachers are not aware or too clear as to what are the next steps. So all of these protocols need to be clear for everyone from the top to the bottom in order to ensure that children have a safe space to come forward and speak towards their experiences if they are a victim of child sexual abuse.
Yeah.
And I would also say to the media that when we are reporting about instances of sexual abuse and even gender-based violence, related issues of gender-based violence, it must be treated with sensitivity. Most times when you see headlines, it could be somewhat problematic and somewhat victim-blaming. We have to be careful how we are speaking about these issues, because what it does, it silences person and they are unable to come forward and speak their truth.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been the coordinator for the project?
Well, I have been the coordinator from 2023, specifically for this phase of the project, which is underneath the Bankers Association of Trinidad and Tobago and the Institute for Gender and Development Studies.
Mm-hmm.
Memorandum of Understanding. However, I have been aware of the project's existence way before. I would not disclose my age.
No, I'm not.
Right?
I wouldn't ask you that.
No, I would. I know. I would disclose, in terms of, I would disclose, I should know how far back. But the project is very significant to me as a young person as well.
Well,
because most of the times children do not have that space to talk, to express, to show, to feel. And I think it's important that we create that space.
Well, the reason why I asked how long you've been involved is there's something specific I want to get from you. Because mm-hmm. when you are involved with things like these, they have an impact on you personally. And that's where I want to take the conversation. It's all well and good to talk about the statistics and the data and the projects and the plans and the implementation, all those things. As an individual, someone, and I'm not asking your age, I'm just asking about your involvement, you are face to face with what can be one of the ugliest elements of human existence. How has it impacted on you? Has it had a profound impact on you or not?
It has had a profound impact on me, particularly in my own personal engagement with the children in my life. I find myself to be more cautious and more vigilant, and not in the way of like being overbearing, but actually understanding of giving children their voices.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in an era where we tell children, stay in their place. This is big people talk, stay in a child's place. I think that had an implication in that a lot of children grew up to be adults who didn't talk. And now we have the opportunity to shift and turn away from that.
Well, you know,
for most time, yeah, go ahead.
It's interesting you say that, because we condition children in a certain way throughout their entire upbringing, in that a child who speaks too much is described as a problem.
Yes.
And that has been shifting a bit, but not too much, even with the school system now. If you have children who ask too many questions or whatever else, they are described as problematic, because the system conditions you to not ask too much question. Don't give too much trouble. Sit down quiet. And once you sit down quiet and you do what you're told, you're a model student, you're behaving, and that's good. And what I was told some time ago, that intelligent children and people, they don't follow that rule. They're forever asking a question, they're forever questioning something, they're fidgety and all these kinds of things. And it really is interesting what you're saying, and how we need to change our perspective on so many different things, and being able to get people to speak about things and having that enabling environment. The school system don't encourage that at all. And hearing from you now how this has impacted on you, I'm sorry that I interrupted you, because I wanted to get back to that as to how you're treating with your own personal experiences. And I want you to tie into that some advice for persons who may be listening into us now and are questioning to themselves, well, is this something that I should speak about? Go ahead.
Of course. I think parents, don't be too scared. They know more than you think. And I think we tend to underestimate how amazing our children are. and shying away from big topics is not going to help. Also, have conversations with them. Make them, you know, understand that their voice matters. It is well and okay to understand that things have to be contextual and age appropriate, but you cannot continue to silence children and make them feel somewhat smaller. So, you know, there's a way in which we make children feel like, you know, we are the adults, they are the children, so therefore we have all of the power. And it is a power dynamic in case that is. So therefore they have no say, they have no opinion. What they have to say doesn't matter. But it does matter, because when we allow that, when we allow children to have the space to talk and to share their ideas, then they will not be afraid if something bad happens to come and say, hey, this is what is happening to me. But if we create a culture where we silence them continuously and we hover our adulthood over them as a way of controlling them, mm-hmm. they are not going to open up to us.
Yeah, I understand fully what you're talking about, because I have a toddler. She's a year and a half. And she's, I can tell you, children teach you a lot. This one teaching me patience all over again. But it's just, you know, you have, children are different. The child of years gone by is vastly different from the child of today. And one of the things that my toddler is teaching me is that I have to try to see the world through her eyes. You know, she's very active. She don't sit in one place. She always pulling something. But it's not because she hardened. It's because she's inquisitive. And she's always trying to learn. She's always trying to see. And that paradigm shift from where I was in my days gone by, I couldn't do those things because it was two-hand and that was the end of that. But, you know, it really is. You know, children, from what you're saying, they need that enabling environment. They need to be able to think to themselves that, well, I wouldn't get in trouble if I tell mommy or daddy this. And that's a tough thing for some people. It really is. Because you have all the other challenges that you have to go through, and this is just another one on top of them. Sometimes it can be overbearing for some. This, we're going to drop the curtains on our conversation here this morning. I must say to you that, and I don't say this often, that I'm impressed with your approach to the entire discussion. You have a wealth of information at your fingertips, and you can tell from your responses to the questions, you know what you're talking about. And one of the things that I find sad is that persons like yourself are not in a greater decision-making role in addressing some of the problems that confront us as a nation. And that's an indictment against us. Because we have people who know what to do. They're just not getting the opportunity to do it in the manner in which it needs to be done. But that's a discussion for another time. I'm sure we'll have more discussions. I want to thank you for being with us here this morning and giving us an insight into the belly of the beast, into some matters that need to be addressed on a national level. Thank you once again for being here with us this morning.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Mr. Hamabir.
And that,
appreciate
of course, it was an interesting discussion. And ladies and gentlemen, that's how we drop our conversation here this morning with Project Coordinator, the Institute of Gender and Development Studies at UWI, that's Khadija Peer. As I said to you, there's a lot more that we need to discuss about some of these things. We have a long way to go. Yes, we've made some strides, but as a people, sometimes we don't appreciate some of the, I don't want to use the word understand, but many times we don't appreciate, probably evaluate things the way that they need to be evaluated.